I'll recommend the hearing.
Mr. Havel,
there's just one matter that occurred to us over lunch. In Mr. Reitman's evidence, in the first paragraph, he sets out there a number of lots that are owned or controlled. It might be helpful for us if they can be marked up on a map or something so that we can compare that with other information we have so we understand the whole situation.
He's speaking again.
By tomorrow sometime. I presume you can't do it while you're answering our questions as well. if we could deliver tomorrow, would be good.
Do a feast. Everybody can eat it tomorrow.
Yeah. We'll be finishing tomorrow. We timetable to finish at about 3:30, so I presume you'd be here to hear Mr. Bradman the other day.
I might be preparing that.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there was one point just before the adjournment, confirming the position of RCL on area F, so R and H and F. And the position for RCL on that is essentially to seek an outcome that's consistent with what was achieved in Plan Change 44, both in relation to density and the.
Can I suggest that you move the little thing off the stand? I think that's what it is. I think it vibrates. I get feedback for it. That's there.
Yes, so just seeking an outcome that's consistent with what was achieved in Plan Change 44 in relation to both density and the landscape boundaries that relate to that area. So that was the position of Simple Journey Sue.
Sufficiently comprehensive bar on issue. Given the matters I've seen raised in the evidence in that area, I think it's important to emphasise one important point. What is now proposed to be RHDE previously was labelled under the operating district plan in the Downs Village. This provided for some very intensive development. In reality, RCL saw there to be little commercial feasibility in the intensive mixed use outcome required by the rules. Voluntarily reduce the height limit and range of activities that could occur in that area by Plan Change 44. It also moved the proposed, moved the proposed open space area to ensure that the most elevated point in the area would remain open space, thereby preventing what might have been simple in the outcomes. In return, RCL sought and had confirmed an expansion of the boundaries of the area that could be developed on this land. But overall, by my assessment, the theoretical amount of building is probably less than existed in the operating district plan. This point is important in my opinion, given the various evidence presented to the hearings and test team, that residents and other parties may have not reasonably expected this area to be intensively developed. Zoning had been in place to allow this land to be intensively developed right from the very commencement of residential construction at Jack's Point. I've also heard evidence reporting that the likes of visitor accommodation and high density residential development at RHDE could in some way detract from the success of the Jack's Point Village. I do not believe it is relevant to consider the long history of such activities being the name of what is now RHDE. High density residential and visitor accommodation is commonly located in the catchment town center areas, for example, in Queenstown, believe this adds to the vitality in such places, and consider a structure of provisions existing to appropriately manage the outcomes proposed. I'm aware of the comments made in these submissions and evidence as to whether the effects on the achievable residential densities and hand-me-downs are misleading or incorrect. Having discussed the matter with the commissioners, I cannot see how such conclusions are reached. My table after paragraph 50 of my evidence appears to me to be a simple statement of fact, which I included to help give the commissioners an idea of what the average lot size would be. I do not believe I have confused gross and net figures, nor have I extrapolated such figures to advise on the likely residential yield in hand and yards. The yield figures I advised on in my evidence were calculated from the master planning exercise undertaken to establish the likely area of development land in hand and yards. And I do actually have some copies of a rough master plan that would be useful to provide to you. I'm going to circulate that. It just shows some street layouts, first stages, and really just demonstrating how we got to what we think are realistic yield things.
That may be helpful for the street.
I can take you through it, or we may return to it.
Perhaps if we return to it might be easier, and then we can hear your summary, and then you can take us through it at the end. Would that be?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Sure. Otherwise, we might get distracted on that.
Using the gas from the other land. So this, in my experience, I'm referring to using the master plan approach. So it's is a preferable approach to the comparatively simplistic approach of, say, subtracting 30 or 35% of land for roads, bridges, etc. On a related matter, while I believe there are various ways to express density targets in district plans, I favour the approach of the density figures used in the proposed Jacksonville resort zone, at least that's a Jacksonville zone. In my opinion, it gives more certainty as to the nature of development anticipated than I think given should go on for just their gross figures, which are greatly distorted by site constraints, e.g. stormwater areas and non-residential activities such as schools. I've heard questions raised as to whether high-density development can occur in parts of Henley Downs without adversely affecting water quality paths at Jacksonville. I am doubtful whether such matters were raised in the directly from these submissions. Had they been, I would have arranged for an expert to prepare for the plan. The plan change 44 had extensive detailed evidence explaining how stormwater can be appropriately managed to not degrade any water quality or increase stormwater runoff. This included a provisional plan based on that's a plan for stormwater management. Based on a provisional anticipated lot layout and accounting for the densities of development proposed and confirmed by the engineer. The witness, Mr. Gary Dean, jointly provided his evidence on behalf of Jack's Point. I am happy to make that statement of evidence available for record to the Commission's view of this as an evidence. So it's over to you, and I think that's valuable adding to the paper that you've got, that statement of evidence of Plan Change 44 relating to. Stormwater issues, so if you hold back, you don't think about that.
At least Commissioner Nixon has any desire to have that.
The thing I often does here is you state that Mr. Dent at that time jointly provided evidence on behalf of both parties, and presumably confirmed that the high density option that you've been talking about is viable from a stormwater disposal perspective.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine.
I have read and carefully considered the evidence of Mr. Compton Marlin. It is my understanding that he does not object to development that exceeds 1 meter to 380 meters squared. His concern, as I understand it, is in relation to renting lots formed smaller than 380 meters squared without sufficient design detail or built-in control, as opposed to supporting the reduction of crystal density in RHDV. In my opinion, Mr. Compton Moen raises relevant points in relation to controlling build port outcomes in medium to high density environments. I nevertheless continue to believe that the methods I proposed to my evidence in chief, that's the evidence for this hearing, I'm proposing, at both the subdivision and resource zone hearings. So I make reference to this at the beginning of my evidence.
You mean chapter 27?
Yes.
When you say subdivision?
Yes. Yeah. Ensure appropriate account to be given to design matters and managing such development. To me, these details are very important for mutual achievement objectives relating to affordability and quality of design in an efficient manner. I would be happy to discuss my thoughts on this next further with the commissioners. To me, the significant efficiencies to be gained by providing for permitted housing development in small lots are worthy of considerable weighting in the commission's assessment of the appropriate methods. I also believe there is real value in terms of efficient use of land for relaxing some standards as they relate to the likes of side yard setbacks and precision planes proposed RHD and RSH units. In terms of the summary of the statutory context I provided, after lodging my evidence, it occurred to me that I have listed an obvious relevant statutory document in the NPS on urban development. Now is not the place for me to assess that in detail, but it would appear to me that the outcomes proposed by handy downs can draw support from the objectives and policies promoting supply and diversity in housing. I also acknowledge the relevance of the NPS and fresh water management, as discussed by the Commission in the 1990s. With regards to the proposal made by RCR in its submission in relation to the proposed OSCR, I should correct the record on one matter. I was informed prior to lodging evidence that an agreement existed to enable the movement of easements, and I expected to be able to table such an agreement. I can now confirm that there appears to have been misunderstanding in that respect. However, whether such agreement existed or not was never, in my opinion, central to the merits of the zone proposed by RCO. So I do apologise if that was misleading. Anyway, one can note that there are already quite large gaps in easements on this land, which may fit buildings with little any adjustment. So I know the layout of the easements was appended to the evidence of others. And, I believe there are large gaps that can enable buildings. Furthermore, I suggest that the zoning commission confirmed to this point is likely to remain as part of the zone lease in place of 15 million years. I expect that over that time, the requirements of these easements and OIC consent could change. RCR and QOC are extending public wastewater in relation to Jackson Point, and the parts of land upon which this infrastructure sits is large and underutilised. From my discussions with a relevant soil disposal expert, it was indicated to me that it was unlikely that infrastructure would not be configured to cover other parts of the site. Consider that the zoning can be considered on its merits against such an easement. Consent issues can be resolved.
Would you like to take us through this plan now?
Yes. Firstly, I'm always a little reluctant to table these kinds of plans because they're always such a work in progress. And
would you take it up there?
Yes.
Understood.
Yes. And from a design perspective, there's undoubtedly improvements in the layouts that can occur. But nevertheless, I worked with RCL and continue to work with RCL on the master planning and the subdivisions that are coming through. DP1 has now been lodged and approved, as shown on this plan, and that shows the approved road access coming in off Kingston Road and State Highway. DP3 is lodged with council and expected to progress and hopefully be approved shortly.
Just to clarify the discussion this morning, is it a condition on DP1 that intersection with the State Highway be constructed?
Yes, it's the exit shown.
Yeah. So that is going to happen.
It has, and the notice of requirement has been lots of money into TA. Rather than an alteration to the designation.
To the designation.
Yes. Okay. This is being processed at the moment. And we went through this process to establish likely block layouts, etc. And clearly we're not showing individual lots because if you can establish your overall sort of block layout, you can change the frontages, etc. to adjust it to density, and no doubt the block layout will change. I expect that, for example, the primary road running down will move somewhat. These will be details that will in due course. You get a feel for at least the first stage of reserve planting, of reserve area, both recreational reserve and what's been described as a drainage reserve, which is a significant community asset. Education and the likes, which you may ask more questions in due course in relation to the appointments. There may be additional growth spaces also. But I guess my key point really is that we went through this process, we figured out what we think is the roads and the reserves and what have you, what is likely to be approximately the leftover land. And from that, we did see what we were able to figure out how much land we have and apply the density rules and get a pretty good feel for the likely yield that for any pounds could deliver. And somewhere in the middle of that range, there's a comment I make around 750 dwellings. That's a number amongst the team we've sort of started to use as a likely outcome. But given this is a long-term project, that could move either way. Happy to take any questions on the layout.
Yes, quite a lot of interesting things we'd like to look at there. The argument was put to us by the Jack's Point Entities Corbin was that, before we get on to scope and issues like that, was that they didn't have an issue with the kind of high density development you're proposing. The difference of opinion appeared to be that, in their view, there should be a consent process for higher density subdivision. Not that it shouldn't happen. There only seemed to be, if you went below the 380 square metre, or any lot below 380 square metres, it needed to be a comprehensive type of development because you're, restricted discretionary activity consent process. What's your comment on that, first of all?
Just before I get to the point, I was a little unsure where they stood on that because they were also quite keen to bring down the density range as applied to that area. You'll recall down from the 44 dwellings, the net dwellings,
25.
Yes, so there was a bigger picture issue there as well, as I understood at least. But in terms of the mechanisms that apply, I thought that was quite fit. And I guess I emphasised it before, the importance to me around acknowledging the importance of design, but the importance to me in trying to have a role for standalone housing on small lots as a permitted activity. And I think that, that it's a significant efficiency advantage and affordability advantage, and I would like to see mechanisms to that effect. Certainly, I'm quite a bit concerned around sections, in, particularly in the 300 square metre to 380 square metre range, where I think I presented a couple of examples of that in the Australian context, standalone houses of 312 square metres, etc. I think from an affordability angle, it would be really valuable to have a permitted housing on those kinds of lots. And a further point is, though, that there is actually a mechanism, as I understand it, already in the proposed plan, where you have three or more attached units that do kick in, and sort of terraced housing type properties, I suppose, we do kick into restrictive discretionary status, I believe. So there is a degree of design control of that unit there. I would like to see, to wrap this up, I would like to see, because I think some quite detailed design controls on quite small lots, perhaps even sub 300 square metres and 250 kind of range, that allow for a thematic development, and then those talk about the mechanisms of conversion, those being applied by some consent notices if you're for a subdivision. I see significant sort of efficiencies in regard.
I'll come back to the subdivision issue a bit later, but I wasn't involved in PC 44, as you no doubt realise. And this came up before in the earlier evidence. What did PC 44 allow in that respect? Did it allow for standalone, for the lower densities for standalone small dwellings that you've just discussed now?
Yes.
Can you recall what area it allowed down to?
I don't think, by my recollection, it's even in lot size. No, I don't think so. These concerns may not recall that, I don't believe so.
Okay. Now, looking at studying your paragraph 76 onwards, as I understand it, what you've suggested that there should be, and I presume you're talking about lots of less than 550, if I'm wrong about that, please tell me, but there doesn't need to be a site coverage restriction. Right? Starts about 76, your paragraph 76.
Right. Building coverage. No, I don't think I've argued that, to be clear. I don't think there should be no site coverage at all.
I wasn't sure whether you meant, I'm not saying it should be none at all, but I thought you were saying that put another way, there's no need for a site coverage limitation once you get below a certain allotment size.
I would agree with that view, providing there is a clear discretion available in the subdivision, because the methodologies that I think have been quite effective for our first stage subdivisions and to draw a building platform that's actually visible on the site, it's registered as a consent notice, and there is discretion to consider urban design merits and stormwater effects, etc., rather than engineering related matters at that point. I think that is a valid approach.
And similarly, with the recession plan rule, that starts with paragraph 81, again, my understanding was that could hinder more intensive development. And I think you made the comment, probably justifiably, that if you're going to live in a high density environment, you can't expect, you may have to pay a price in terms of sub-high commission.
Yes, I agree. It may have a high density development, certainly, and it would be two story developments and lots. It's a possibility of discourage.
Now, with the road setback one, which begins in paragraph 87 and goes on to paragraph 89, I wasn't quite clear at the end what you were actually saying there as to whether you thought there should be a larger setback to provide for of at least 4.5 to 5.5, or whether you were suggesting that, again, should be a matter of a design matter that should be attached to subdivision stage.
Overall, I'm promoting this method of allowing many of these matters to be considered at a subdivision stage. If the Commission is minded to apply a road setback rule, I would be quite comfortable with that 4.5 metre. So that road setback, that's a significant setback, I think, because it's very important for many different reasons. There is a proviso there that I go into about a site with two frontages, having a 4.5 metre setback off both frontages.
Commonly understood, that's right. Yes. Now, at the moment, as I understand it, the front yard setback is actually less than, you're allowed to have less than 4.5, aren't you?
I believe you are.
Yeah. So that wouldn't be a problem for you in a way, because if you choose to have a bigger one, that's your call, isn't it?
That's right, and I think, as I understand it, the RCR would apply a bigger setback.
Now that brings us to the question of the mechanism. You talk about subdivision as a means of dealing with this. Is there a mechanism you could perhaps put in front of us to show how that would work at the subdivision stage?
Yes,
I may have missed that. Apologies if I have, but I was wondering how that would work.
Yeah, I can understand how you might have missed it, because I submitted it as part of my evidence in Chapter 27, the subdivision chapter.
I can't remember that.
No, I understand. And basically, I suggested some track changes at that point and looked at the list of matters of discretion available and tried to make them quite clear, all the different matters that I believe should be considered. And there was reference to the imposition by appropriate legal mechanism of controls over this matters of control or discretion, depending where the commission lands on that matter. And I believe in smaller lots it should be restricted discretionary. Building setbacks from boundaries, location, heights of garages and other accessory buildings, height limitations for parts of buildings, including recession plane requirements, window locations, building coverage, roadside fence heights. So I envisage a situation where there was a lot of discretion at the time of subdivision, and some quite detailed controls that would apply by consent notices.
So would I be correct in assuming if you subject this, you'd have a rule basically restricted discretion activity subdivision,
yes,
and an imposing consent, you have a whole range of yes, assessment matters, which would include the kind of things you've described
yes,
previously, like the council might presumably say, well, you know, show us your design, and we'd impose that through consent notice.
Yes, I believe this is an effective, efficient method, having gone through a very similar process with stage one of appendix R, 11.12, and the information is clear, for example, section-wise, it's quite succinctly summarised.
So that was the mechanism was used in some of the consents that have already been approved and handed out. I think we talked about 150 before, so some of that's already gone through the council.
Yes, 109 lots have been confirmed.
Using this kind of approach.
Yes, and that was under the operating plan. We volunteered many of those mechanisms. Yes.
Would it? I don't know. Are you suggesting it would assist us if we incorporated your Chapter 27 evidence into this hearing, spring? Because I'm the only one who has heard it. And the other commissioners, of course, won't have the chance and opportunity to question them as well.
Yes, I actually have copies of it here. Perhaps I should have had it attached in the hindsight. I do cross-reference in my evidence to say that it should be read in conjunction, but it's quite understandable that that may not happen. So, would you like me to circulate?
That might be helpful. Thank you.
Then there's a second half that you can offer. That I was talking about is subdivision guidelines. It's really not relevant. But in terms of helping us right now, at the back end of this statement, it's an underlying strikeout version of
yeah,
what I suggested you change.
I'm looking at rule 27.7.4. Is that what I should be looking? And you've got zone-specific standards, and you talk about Jack's Point Zone Structure Plan.
Yes.
You set out a whole range of matters.
Yep.
And towards the bottom of the first page, you've got six, the imposition by appropriate legal mechanism of control over building setbacks and boundaries, location and heights of garages and other accessory buildings, height limitations, that kind of, that's the one, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I've got a bit better handle on what, yeah, because I didn't quite have a mental picture of what you're trying to do before.
Yes, I understand that.
Now, I take it, in terms of the difference in densities, you talked about before about 24, I think it is, 25 per hectare, and where you're looking at that higher density being an upper limit. Now, that would produce for HDE, 1750, so you would want to see that as an upper limit. I think currently it's 1250, isn't it?
To be clear on that point, I calculate, to be clear, the 1750 was a light figure. I think the maximum we've calculated yield you could get across RHD SRH, we think it's about 2,200 dwellings. I think this is similar sort of calculations. It's a couple hundred lower than 42A planning, etc. has got to that upper end of the yield. The lower end you mentioned is around about 1,200.
The reason I raise that question is that there's a rule in the plan, as you're aware, for each of those activity areas or cells within the Hanley Downs
yes.
area, which gives a range, a bottom
yes.
and a top.
Yeah.
So obviously, if, in terms of your relief sort, it needs to be clear, not only for HDE, but possibly for the other ones, whether you agree with that range, or whether there should be a range, or whether it's appropriate or not.
We agree with the range. I agree with the range.
Now, the only other things I'd ask you now, which came to sort of almost a little gobsmacked, was, and maybe the subject we missed earlier, is that the earlier evidence was stated that the relief being sought by the Jacksbourne entities was actually beyond scope. Specifically, can you help me? What you see, was it the 380 square metre limit, or what was it that was beyond scope?
I've looked at it. And obviously I looked at submissions when they first came in and made an assessment of the situation. And I cannot see personally in the Jack's Point submissions or the JPRA submissions any reference to what would happen in the RHD areas. And you know, I appreciate it could be wrong, it takes a very detailed analysis to get through these scope issues, but I couldn't spot it. Certainly, to me, it's not at all clearly signaled that affected how we prepared for the hearing. It's almost by virtue of not seeing anything there that I, you know, that's basically the summary. I just don't think it's there, in my opinion. And furthermore, in the further submissions, I've also looked at those, and I haven't spotted anything indicating scope to address those issues.
Specifically, the 380 and the 550, because that seems to be, it's also picked up in the officer's report, that seems to be a pretty core element of what is being sought through by Jack's Point.
I do recall them would need to double check this reference to the 380 square metre minimum loft size, which is notified as discretionary, restricted discretionary. But I sort of talking about my recollection here, I don't recall being in opposition. But I think that was important that as I heard today, but I guess my particular concern is taking that and then making an argument that the overall range of density provided for should come down. That seems to be a leap that because I think it was always anticipated through the structure of the rules that would be exceeded. Because this was set as a discretionary lot size and the range was there to be achieved.
So, I take it from what you just said that your primary concern is if you take the 380 square metre, or call it the threshold, and then use that to justify a 24, maximum of 24 dwellings per hectare, that's your problem.
Particularly not my problem, yes.
One other question is that. Are we talking here purely about RDHEE, but also the other ones as well? Do your comments also apply to RHDA, RHDB, and all those ones?
They apply to all of them.
Okay.
Okay.
most than the one. But I'm one other area I have is the triangle by RHBB. And in paragraph 48, when you talk there about Mr. Espy confirming there's no compelling landscape reason, is that the only amenity value that should be taken into account?
No, it's a fair question. It's,
is it? I mean, the reason I ask that question is that it seemed to me from the description of it that you gave that it looks like a neighbourhood park location.
There's
an intro on four sides.
Oh, I mean, you've seen that master plan layout, but how it could be incorporated into this each one. Mine's just some time to get everyone's attention. If I could have an opportunity to expand on that's been a little bit brief in that regard. I think I'd imagine the family would benefit from the site to see this site. Because by my assessment, when you're there, I really do not think there were any other major community effects on the neighbouring sites. There's quite a level change in some mounting in place, etc., that makes it quite visually distinguishable. There's some distance between the areas being remained, quite a considerable buffer.
So you suggest that we wait until we've seen it before we come to any further conclusions on that?
Well, sure, yeah. I'm just suggesting that dealing with it verbally, I don't believe there are other major amenity concerns in this regard. I think it would be appropriate to be accommodated as a residential activity, given the effects that you are just mentioned. Commissioner Nixon asked about when I referred to my evidence to an RE number, the identifier of a consent in relation to the State Highway section, whose sentence seemed to be consistent with other ones described.
Oh, yes.
The reason is here that there was an outline development plan submitted and approved, and I believe that's the one that I provided. And at that point, it was dealt with the intersection issue, and then subsequently a subdivision consent, which was the other number more familiar with the standing of the consent.
Thank you for that, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, we've got a plan to produce one to you tomorrow, so we'll do that. Just wondered if it might be of assistance, could one thing that Mr. Jones do is produce a track change version of the changes. He's outlined in narrative form what he seeks, but not in track change form as such. But that's something that might be of assistance to the commissioners, is that could be produced as well.
It may well be of assistance. Trying to understand the government, obviously, the difference between yourselves and to Jack's point, entities, particularly around the density issues, but things of that nature. What seemed very simple yesterday doesn't seem quite so simple today.
No. Yes, in that regard, I believe it's going to. I'll double check this when we go through some. I don't believe that we're going to see any change from the notified plan in that respect. I think I particularly had in mind at the end of my evidence, I start listing the bullet points, how this OSCR, the appropriate provisions, would play out. And I'm quite relaxed if you get enough paper ready, but I'm quite happy to submit a track change version of that would apply if it's important.
I think it would be helpful. If it raises any matters that we consider other submitters should be, have the opportunity to comment on, we will do that on the papers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Case, for the class here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before Mr. Freeman starts, I understand that Ms. Jones has something she wants to pass to the commissioners.
Yes, thank you. If I could just clarify a point. People will be familiar with the digitised version of the Council's Section 42A structure plan that was produced, and I've just noticed that there's an error in that relation to the lodge site. So can I approach the commissioner and just point those out to you? Anyone else who needs further clarification, I can show them. Essentially,
this is the one with the
So, essentially, the the two westernmost areas of lots, which is actually two of the three additional areas that the Wild Ground Partnership sought, which is this standalone area down here, which needs to be struck out as far as the council's recommendation is concerned. So, we've recommended in our 42A report to reject the addition of that, and also this tail, such as it, which starts and aligns as well with that lakeshore.
So that was the wild grass submission.
Yes.
With three red blocks to be added. These two here, and being included on.
Thanks for that.
Submission 567 saw the expansion of the LAA block activity areas for 3 years not proposed, specifically two pods located to the west of the existing LAA, which I refer to as the Western Pods, or one pod is located to the east. alternative to the eastern plot. As regards to the eastern plot, I agree with the rationale of both Ms. Jones and Dr. Regan in terms of the acceptability of this pod being used for parking purposes in association with the development of the existing LNA. I'm comfortable with the recommended setback of 10 metres from the boundaries of the subject development as recommended by Dr. Reed. The setback can thus be utilised for appropriate planting mounting in order to appropriate screen current mounting activities that could occur within a decent plot. I've evaluated the observations adopted with Dr. Reed in terms of the two western plots. I accept Dr. Reed's views with potential zoning with regard to the western plots. I noticed in the LNA in the western direction. In my view, the future developments proposed in the location of the western plots in the resource consent process with the submission of detailed information to the council would be more appropriate, allowing careful consideration of any building form and associated activities such as earthworks. The merits of such specific programs to be considered by the council, providing greater certainty as to the actual effects on the environment of such built form. Building status. Ms. Jones has recommended that the status of buildings within the LNA can be classified as an RD activity, which are in Rule 41.4.31 contained in the report. Noted by status of buildings in the LAA was that of controlled activity. The recommended RD status of buildings is consistent with the current ownership in the ODP. I'm comfortable with buildings being reclassified as RD within the LAA and considered compliance with other applicable rules. However, I note that the provision 12.2.4.B.2 of the operative district plan for the zone provided the council with the ability to approve resource consents of buildings in the LAA on a non-notified basis without affected party approvals. In my view, should buildings be reclassified as RD and LAA in a similar provision to the operative provision 12.2.4.B.2 should be included in the zone. Prior to the hearing, I had a discussion with Ms. Jones on the point. I understand that Ms. Jones and Dr. Reed are comfortable and not recommending that the non-notification provision be put back in. Earthworks. The undertaking of earthworks is an anticipated outcome of developing the LAA due to the highly variable topography of the land. This is what is by the existing in-line resource consent that have been issued for development from the LAA with varying levels of associated earthworks. Such consents have collectively authorised over 70 buildings within the LAA with earthworks primarily associated with building activity and access. Irrespective of the classification of built form within the LAA, Rule 41.431 from the Section 42 report provides discretion on Council's part in terms of associated earthworks and landscaping. This approach is consistent with the ODP in terms of earthworks associated with buildings. I can understand the rationale of Ms. Jones relying on Dr. Reed in terms of providing a maximum cut height of 1 metre for accesses in the bow slope, 65 degrees. Within the LAA, however, such methods could be quite restrictive for a location that anticipates development and associated earthworks. In my view, the maximum cut for the LAA should be at least 2 metres in height, while noting that the council still has the general control of earthworks as a matter of discretion. In terms of outdoor swimming pools and tennis courts, I'm comfortable with the recommended changes to these features. Again, in the start of liquor, I'm comfortable with the classification as RD activity. Meeting facilities and reasonable activities. Ms. Jones is correct in stating that meeting facilities are included within the broad definition of visitor accommodation of both the ODP and the PDP. As such, there should not be the need to specifically list meeting facilities there. Rule 41.496 is contained in the report. In terms of the potential residential use, Ms. Jones raises valid points as to why such a use is not appropriate in the LAA. In this regard, I agree with Ms. Jones that the standard residential subdivision development approach within the LAA, even at a high quality level, as well as by existing residential development in Jack's Point, will produce quite a different outcome for the LAA compared to the residential accommodation development. In my view, the LAA could be developed in a comprehensive manner in terms of density, form, access and landscape with a mixed use of approach that enables improved accommodation, associated amenities and facilities, as well as quantum buildings that can be utilised as visitor accommodation and residential accommodation. It is common for hotel residences to be an integral part of the hotel development. However, as we're developing outside of the LAA, as both suitability or not of residential use can be properly tested through a resource consent process as opposed to expressly providing for residential use in the LAA, be the rule 49496 as contained in the report. Thank you.
Just on the earthworks issue, what consent status will it change by altering the height of batteries?
If you've exceeded the 1 meter,
yes.
You should have discretion.
Then go to restrictive discretion.
So you'd have the, based on the latest provisions, that the building can be restrictive discretionary, and there was a 1.5 cut for access that would trigger another RD consent.
Right, so it wouldn't actually, it's not considered a full discretionary among compliant or anything like that. The other question I had is, I don't think you were here the other day when I raised this matter. I was wondering whether it would be helpful if the pods were numbered. So yes. Instead of talking about the eastern pod, the western pod, the big one, the little one, we number the 1, 2, 3 or whatever.
That would be a very good idea, so I think that.
I just looked at paragraph 15. I'm comfortable with the building being reclassified as restricted. Did anyone actually seek that they be classified as restricted discretionary?
Not that I'm aware of. Wildgrass, in the Wildgrass submission, we support a controlled activity status. And I don't think anyone sought to be classified as restricted.
For general submissions that seem to go back to them.
Oh, sorry.
Annotations
as
in the ODP.
Oh, so the ODP is a restricted discretion. Okay, that's fine. I just want to make sure there was scope for that. That was all.
Yeah, I think there wasn't a specific number of general submissions that revert back to the operative person.
Okay, and you mentioned before that in discussion with the judge, you reached agreement with respect to that if it does that, it would be not notified.
That's correct. We met a couple of weeks ago and discussed it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Time for
Okay. Prepared a brief addendum, if you like, to her evidence. So she's really just set out in that quite brief document the fact that she's read all the evidence, obviously, and the supplement, well, the summary presented by Ms. Evans at the commencement of the hearing, Mr. Edmonds' changes that she's been involved in conferencing, and essentially that she's in agreement with where the other two have got to. She also offers her understanding at paragraph 1.8 around the differences in the height limits from the notified version to John Edmonds' version through areas R 14, 15, 16, and 17. She confirms that her understanding is because R 14 has moved further away from the X-ray truss site, that means it can have an additional metre of height added without adversely impacting on the X-ray truss land.
Yes, Mr. Edmonds explained that this morning, and she's confirming.
Yes, she is. And further to his evidence this morning, or the questions that you were asking him, she will be also involved in finalising what I understand to be a joint statement and putting those before the panel as part of the council's final reply. Not to labour a point, because all the panellists do agree about putting these guidelines to one side, but from X-ray's perspective, that is an outcome that offers them certainty. They certainly weren't happy with proposing to have guidelines that sat outside the plan and that contained standards that they weren't necessarily able to influence or have been part in promulgating or agreeing. So they're thrilled with that outcome.
Can I, just on that point, clarify whether it's the standards that were contained in the guidelines that were the important features, or was it in the entire guidelines?
From their perspective, the standards that are of importance to them are the height limits and the recession plane rules around particular thinkers. They identified platforms in R15.
That's what I wanted to clarify.
Yes.
Yes, so that's not whether they have a crenellated eaves or something like
they
that.
They weren't so concerned with those matters because the visual simulation they work is established, they won't see them. That's quite right. And just reiterating, I think, a point my friend Mr. Gordon made this morning about their submission, yes, the appropriate way to deal with it should be that it's accepted in part because there is a scope issue there relying on their submission to make the changes that have been made rather than
yes.
to reject it.
Yes. Do you have anything you wish to clarify?
No, it's quite clear, mate.
Oh, good.
Right.
Thank you very much. Sure,
sweet.
In which case, I'll adjourn until 10:30 tomorrow morning.
Yeah, that was a surprise, because I think we need the scope.